When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Josh. And for this week's SYSK Selects, I've chosen an episode from 2010, Have All the Good Ideas Been Discovered? It's an interesting one, and in a strange way it ties into the planned obsolescence episode we released recently, even though it was recorded almost 10 years before. And I want to make a note. It's possible that the listener mail person who wrote in this episode actually predicted the coming of the wildly popular site Damn You Autocorrect. Prove me wrong. At any rate, enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and that makes this Stuff You Should Know.
That's right.
Yes, it is.
Not other imitators.
I wonder how many times I've said that.
That makes this Stuff You Should Know?
No, just the whole spiel, the whole opening. Hey, welcome to the podcast.
Well, you've said it about 270-something times, I think. Luckily, we have them all saved, and we could count.
We do. I don't know if that's lucky, though, Chuck.
That's a lot of shows, dude. We should do something special for 300. That's like, that's a lot of shows.
It is.
That makes me proud.
Okay, well, do you think maybe we could get some cake around here or something?
A shrimp cocktail? Yeah. For the love of Pete?
No, I'm allergic to shrimp now, remember?
I know. But I still like to throw it out there.
Actually,
I
ate a shrimp wonton the other day and nothing happened.
Really?
Or I ate a wonton with shrimp and nothing happened.
So it was just like tiny little bits of shrimp in
there? I don't know. Either that or I'm getting stronger.
Maybe so.
Superhuman, you might say.
Transhuman.
Speaking of human.
Yes.
Chuck, there is a recent study that came out in part from one of our universities here in the city, Emory.
Mm-hmm.
Right down the street.
Great school.
There's been this problem that's been plaguing researchers for a really long time, and that is at the beginning of the lower Paleolithic period, which is about 2.7 million years ago,
okay,
we started using sharp rocks as bashing and cutting tools.
Okay.
So we figured that out. Okay? You can take a rock. That's technology.
Sure.
That's not horse. That's technology.
Yes.
Okay? You can take this rock and you can use it to open a coconut or the head of someone who's wronged you.
Using an implement to complete a task.
Well, specifically sharp rocks.
Okay.
It took 2 million years, the end of the lower Paleolithic period, before we figured out that we could actually attach handles to these things and turn them into axes.
Is that how long it took?
Yes.
Wow.
And this has baffled scientists. Like, how could it possibly have taken 2 million years to go from using your hand to attaching a stick?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure.
This doesn't make any sense. So,
Well, they were dumb back then.
Well, a dumb is close to it. They literally were lacking the region of the brain needed, apparently, according to this new study. They basically, we developed a region in the right hemisphere, specifically the supramarginal gyrus.
Wow.
Which allowed us to go, hey, let's put a handle on this. And after we did that, we moved out of Africa and started colonizing the rest of the world.
So that's, they pinpointed the region of the brain that is specific to innovation?
Specific to stone tool making.
Okay. I thought you meant innovation in general.
No.
Like that's where your ideas come from.
No. Give me a second. I'll tell you.
Shoot. Did I ruin it?
It's okay.
Okay.
So we go from can't figure out how to attach a handle to a sharp rock.
Okay.
2 million years, we figure that out, we leave Africa, and we start colonizing the rest of the world, and all of a sudden things start entering light speed, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it seems like over the last couple hundred years, you know, especially since the Industrial Revolution, mm-hmm. our ability to innovate, to grasp new ideas, to understand the world around us
sure.
has just been hitting this hyperspeed. And a lot of people wonder if we've reached a point where all the ideas, all the good ones at least, have already been discovered. Understand how everything works, and there's really just figuring out how to dot the I's and cross the T's, right?
Right.
And there was actually a guy who famously said in 1899, a guy named Charles Buell.
I love this quote.
He was the commissioner of the patents office. It's attributed to him, I should say.
Yeah.
But he said something like, everything that can be invented has already been invented. And he said this in a memo basically saying, like, you should go ahead and shut down the patent office.
He clearly had never considered the Snuggie. Nice. Josh.
Nice.
Or anything that's been invented since 1900. So here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to go ahead and give you my summation early on.
Okay.
Is that I think people think at various times in history that they've plateaued. And then I think things happen. People come along, innovators. And then they reach new heights and they go, oh, well, we didn't know that.
Right.
And there are new ideas.
Right. It's almost it almost displays a shameful lack of historic awareness to say we've reached the end of all of our good ideas.
It's just silly.
It's just asking to be made a fool of.
Yeah, or for people to, maybe people do that on purpose to goad the innovators into saying, oh, yeah?
Right, yeah, using reverse psychology,
yeah, exactly.
Huh? I didn't know that's how innovation works.
Yeah, you might as well just give up.
Reverse psychology drives innovation. That's a good one, Chuck.
There are people, though, that say that real technological innovation has been stalled for quite a while.
Yes.
Like after the 90s computer revolution, everything else since then has kind of been like, packaging it in better-looking cases and sleeker designs. And it's all, like, design-oriented.
It is, or marketing-oriented.
Marketing-oriented, sure.
These guys, Cedric Laguerre and Eric Viardot, who are both with Schema Business School,
right.
Basically say smartphones, yes, they seem incredibly new and cutting-edge, but really they're just the packaging of several already extant
sure.
technologies into a really sharp-looking handheld device.
But that's still a new idea, I would argue.
It is still a new idea, but I think what their point is saying, like, before the late 90s, before the 80s, let's say, with computers,
right.
but especially the tech boom of the telecom boom of the late 90s,
yeah.
like, this stuff wasn't around. Like,
so it's not true innovation.
Real, right. It's,
yeah, yeah.
it's kind of repurposing, right?
Sure.
And what you were saying, like the cosmetic changes to
yeah.
a computer, one of the reasons why they believe that this is going on is because we've come to a point in the computer revolution, I think, Chuck, where it's not – you can still make tons of cash just by changing the casing of a CPU.
Yeah, there's like no money in innovation, basically, is
right.
what I got from this one article.
Right.
Is that innovation costs more than it's worth when you can just repackage what you've got in a sleeker design mm-hmm. and people will buy it up.
Exactly. These two authors of this article predict that we're going to have two trends that will drive innovation, I guess, currently, right?
Yes.
That consolidation, where basically like, especially with, I think they're talking just about computers.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, because they're saying the big hardware firms are going to all consolidate all of the smaller hardware firms.
Right.
To where they'll just basically be like the big three or five. And that will leave it to the software firms to compete and innovate. So we'll see more innovation in the software side rather than the hardware side.
Right.
And they're also saying that the green boom is going to
sure.
drive innovation.
That makes sense.
Like coming up with sustainable packages or sustainable
yeah.
solutions.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
things.
Totally.
Which makes sense.
One of the other things they pointed out, thought was interesting, was they said the tech, they call it the tech refresh cycle, is too small right now.
Yeah.
So what's happening is they'll say, you like your CD? Well, you're going to love the Super Audio CD.
Or and Blu-ray.
You like your DVD, you're going to love Blu-ray. But guess what's coming up after Blu-ray? It's going to be like Super Blu-ray.
Right.
And it's happening so fast, people aren't abandoning their current systems. They're just like, you know what, I'm going to hold on because I don't want to be the guy stuck with the LaserDisc player in a couple of years.
Right.
So all of a sudden, the same thing happens. No one's buying it, so it's not worth as much money.
Which means that nobody's putting any effort into it.
And money into it, so innovation ceases.
Right, and there's a guy named Edmund Phelps, who's a professor of political economy at Columbia University, right?
Yeah.
And he's basically kind of saying the same thing. He's saying that there's not enough money going toward innovation, but rather than the onus being put on consumers not buying Blu-rays out of fear of looking like LaserDisc jerks.
Right.
It's actually government and big business that's not pouring money into small innovators.
Yeah, he said that the innovation is the only thing not subsidized by the United States government, which he says is actually a tax in a way because it's not being subsidized. Sort of a reach.
You could definitely, yeah. I think a lot of this guy's points are a reach, but what he's suggesting is if the government isn't pouring money into big business so that they can pour money into, I guess, small venture firms.
Yeah.
These people who are in their garages aren't going to take, you know, risks.
Yeah,
they're not going to innovate. There's no incentive, right?
Sure.
I disagree with this. I dispute this. Because
I do
too. He's saying, like, the people who do work in their garages and, you know, are the Steve Jobs and Bill Gates in the 70s, that they were driven by this lust for money.
Exactly.
And I think that that's wrong. I think that people innovate first and foremost to get this idea out of their head and birthed
totally.
Into reality, right?
I'm glad you said this because I completely agreed. Regardless of what you think of the Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg didn't invent Facebook to make gobs of money.
No, he invented it to make real friends.
Yeah, to innovate. And that's my point that you made is that these people in the garage, the true innovators, they don't care if they have two pennies to rub together.
Right.
They're still going to be trying to innovate and make a name for themselves and come up with something awesome.
Right. And now there are people out there who are trying to innovate for, you know, the riches.
Snuggie.
Sure.
I'm sure the guy who invented the Snuggie wasn't in his garage and just wanted
like,
to think,
I gotta get this out or else I'm never gonna sleep
yeah,
again.
That's the people that are looking for the next get rich quick thing.
But I think you can also make a point that when you introduce money to innovation, it leads to actual stagnation.
Yeah.
Because when you introduce money, there's now something to lose, and people are less willing to take risks, and
yeah.
risk is one of the driving the willingness to take risk is one of the driving forces of innovation, you know?
Yeah.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Phelps had a good idea, and this will never happen, of course, because it's a good idea, to create the First National Bank of Innovation.
All capitalized, too.
All capitalized.
Not like, all caps, but each word is capitalized.
He should do it all in all caps with exclamation points. But basically, it would be a bank that you could go and partner, you know, as a startup company and partner with this bank for financing and, you know, get, I would guess some sort of low-interest loans to spur innovation.
Right.
That was a great idea.
So it is a good idea, and this does happen in the real world, and the government does pour money into innovation. He's not exactly correct in that sense, and
yeah, sure
I also kind of resented that he placed big business in between you know, people in their garage innovating and, you know, government subsidies that we have to have big business. Give them the money, and then they'll skim a little off the top and give it to this guy in the garage.
He's drawing broad strokes here for sure.
There are government programs, and we'll talk about one from the National Institutes of Health, where the government says, hey, you have a really good idea, Mr. or Ms. Research Scientist, and we're going to give you enough money to survive for 3 years.
Yeah, because the deal is you can always get grants if, you know, you put together a nice package. But this program with the NIH, what's it called? The New Innovator Award, Director's New Innovator Award.
Yeah.
This is intended for people who have such a good idea, but it's so new that they don't have the data to write a grant where people would say, like, it looks like you're onto something here. So they're sort of throwing money at stuff that's like, you know, you're the dude in the garage and we believe in this idea. Go see what you can find out.
Right. And we're keeping big business out of the way.
Yes.
But now that NIH owns you for the rest of your career.
Yeah, probably so, huh?
Yeah. So let's talk about, there's three people at UCLA that got these grants recently. And they're up to some kind of some interesting, one could say innovative stuff, right? They have some good ideas.
Hugely innovative.
About how to approach problems like Professor Dino DiCarlo. All these, I think these people are younger than us, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Dino DiCarlo is working on ways to basically apply heat or pressure or chemicals to very specific sites in cells using nanoparticles and magnets, which is tough.
Sounds like a winning idea to me.
It is. Basically, one of the big problems we have with getting cells, engineering cells to do specific things like, I don't know, attack other cells for fun. Like if... Tell me that wouldn't be like a big Christmas gift this year if you could like make cells fight with one another under a microscope. Then what you have to basically try to engineer the cell, you know, time after time after time and basically program it to do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
What DiCarlo is coming up with is a way to use very tiny magnets and even tinier nanoparticles that can my brain is so small. When you move the magnet with a joystick, it attracts the nanoparticles in a certain direction or whatever, and you can have the nanoparticles apply heat or pressure or a specific chemical to a specific site on a cell and direct it to go attack another cell for your pleasure.
That's awesome.
Your amusement.
So 1.5 mil goes to DiCarlo.
And for a good reason.
And for a good reason. One of the other winners was Hugh Huang, and you... came up with, basically, I'm going to break this down easy. Instead of saying, let me come up with a cure for cancer, Hugh Huang said, let me come up with a way to detect cancer so early, like way earlier than we've ever detected it before, that we can stop it in its track, essentially curing cancer.
Yes.
And he's doing this, actually, I don't know.
I think it's a she.
She's doing this through nanomaterial called graphene, that is just one atom thick.
Yes, graphene is like this super, clearly not of this world material. It's literally a carbon atom thick, that's it.
So it ends up being a sensor, a biological sensor to tell you when cells aren't doing the things they should be doing.
So did you know a gram of this stuff, flattened, covers a football field? A gram.
Wow.
It's ultralight.
That is thin, my friend.
It's one atom thin.
So 1.5 mil to Hugh Huang.
Right. Well, did you explain how?
Oh, no.
Let me try my hand at this.
Okay.
So basically what you do is you you put a graphene conductor or transistor in a cell. And when these biological markers, right, say histones or something like that, start to accumulate, they're attracted to the graphene. And these, by the way, these biological markers are correlated with the growth of cancer.
Right.
The origin of cancer.
Yeah, that's where they're starting.
And when some of these markers like are attracted to the graphene, they create an electrical charge that we can sense. And the graphene is so thin but so highly conductive that with just a couple of these molecules attaching to the graphene, we would be able to detect it. It'd be like, whoop, 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 right?
Yeah.
We'd be like, oh, crap, you have cancer. And we'd cure it right then.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to approach a cure for cancer, if you ask me.
Did I explain that well?
I think so.
I think so, too.
And the last winner this year was Jin Hyung Lee. And Jin is trying to debug the brain circuit using, you know, we have the Wonder Machine, which is our favorite thing in the world, the fMRI.
Right.
Which measures, measures blood and oxygen levels in the brain. So it tells you these areas light up. They're called bold signals, blood and oxygen level dependent. They light up to correspond to certain brain activity.
Right, and we've talked about this before. Like, you're seeing that there's more oxygen that's going to that part of the brain. So we've assumed this is the basis of the fMRI.
Right.
If it has more oxygen being delivered to it, that must mean that that region of the brain is active when you show somebody a picture of, you know, their kid, like, being carried away into a van.
Right.
That, you know, that's the fear region right
sure.
there. That doesn't really say anything, though. And it doesn't. It
well,
doesn't necessarily
subjective.
Implicate. Well, it's not. It's showing. Oh, okay. Well, there's more oxygen in this region, right?
Right. Right.
What this is. What Jin Hyung Lee is looking at is how or what specifically on the neuronal level is being activated.
Right. And
right?
he's using optogenetics.
Right.
So it's going to be called the OFMRI, and that's beyond even what we thought was the Wonder Machine. So this is the super-duper Wonder Machine.
Right.
So and basically he's using light to allow genetically specified neurons to be activated.
Right. You know, one of our listeners at Emory's been harping on us doing one on optogenetics for a while.
Oh, really? We should get this person in here.
This is probably as close as we're ever going
to
come to optogenetics.
Well, it's a great idea, though, obviously, because Jin Hyung Lee won one of the Innovator Awards as well.
Yes.
And they give these out every year.
Mm-hmm.
So they clearly believe that we're not out of good ideas.
No. Excellent point, Chuck.
The NIH.
No, and we're not out of good ideas. So, yes, Chuck, you picked those out. You found those guys, all right?
Well, I didn't personally find them.
You're like, these guys should get the
NIH
grant.
Found them.
There are very good ideas out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
But there is a debate that's raging in science about whether these ideas, like optogenetics or you know, using graphene or nanoparticles to cure or detect cancer,
mm-hmm.
Are these variations on a theme? Are they applying cosmetic changes to a computer rather than really creating new parts to it, right? And basically the question is, are there any more major discoveries for us to make, or are these really just basically a
variations?
Same, remember I've always said, like, we have the pieces on the table, now we just have to put them together.
Yep.
Is that the point that we're at?
Right. Well, you said it, we were.
I did, and then we started researching this, and I'm like, I wonder.
Right.
I think I still do believe that.
Sure.
But
within that, though, there's so much that it's, to me, a little bit like splitting hairs.
Well, you're absolutely right, especially when you throw in the word discovered, right?
Yeah.
Discovery indicates something that's already out there. We just figure it out or stumble upon it.
Sure.
And an idea necessarily kind of
or an invention.
It leads to an invention. It's something we've created, like technology.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
let's talk about discovery, right? We have a lot of problems that are still facing us in how we understand the universe, like human consciousness.
Right.
How do brain cells create our understanding of the world, like what we see as reality?
Right.
How is that possible?
And can we figure everything out?
Well, that's the big question. Is there's a lot of debate about whether or not we'll ever be able to figure everything out, or if the human brain just simply isn't programmed to understand the world fully. You know, there's a guy who's a physicist. His name is Russell Stannard, right? Uh-huh. And he's written this book called The End of Discovery. And basically he says that we're in, quote, a transient age of human development, right?
Right.
Where we're past the point where we figured out you can put a handle on a rock and make it an axe.
Right.
But we're right before the point where we can no longer make discoveries, not because we've understood everything.
Right.
Or figured everything out, but because we've reached the limits of what is knowable for the human brain.
Sure.
But even that, look at that part of the right hemisphere mm-hmm. that developed and allowed us to put the axe handle on.
Right.
Right? Who's to say that our brain won't reach that point?
That's what I said.
Where we can't know anything any longer. Or
right.
We can't know everything. And then we evolve even further, and now all of a sudden we're even better at understanding our world.
Right.
But will we end up eventually coming to a point where humans understand everything and there is no more discovery to make?
I say no, because he points out in here, and this is, I think, very valid, from the mid-19th century, they said that a lot of people in science said, you know, we've kind of debunked religion and philosophy and all these things mm-hmm. with scientific discovery. But he points out, and I agree, that even if you figure out all the problems of science, which will never happen,
right,
there's still human life and consciousness and the subjectivity of what goes on inside a person's head. You're never going to solve. That's not solvable.
Right.
That's what I argue.
That's subjectivism.
Yeah. I think I believe in that.
I agree with you. There's this aspect of the universe that Kant called the noumenon. Noumenon.
Okay.
That was specifically tailored for my thick tongue.
It's good.
But basically the noumenon is the thing itself, right?
Yeah.
Where it's the objective universe, and we don't interact with that. Everything we know and understand is subjective.
Yes.
And this is where subjectivism is based, that basically we can never fully know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly won't ever know everything, because one thing that will always be elusive is what you see.
My reality is different than your reality.
Exactly. And there's
so different.
There's an extreme version of it called solipsism, right?
Yes.
And solipsism is this extreme version of subjectivism that basically says everything is so subjective that I can't fully verify that you exist. The only thing I know that exists is my reality, but all of you may be made up. I may be totally, completely out of my mind and actually in a padded cell right now, and none of you are really real.
Well, that sort of touches on the whole quantum mechanics thing.
Right.
Don't you think?
Please.
Well, I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say about it because we've covered it, but it definitely is along those same lines, don't you think?
Well, yeah, there's an interpretation of quantum mechanics that basically says everything we know about the universe, we know through observation.
Right.
And
but once you observe it, it changes.
That's part of it. And when we observe, we gain information, right? But we can't observe everything at once. So all we know exists in our reality for sure is what we're observing.
Right.
So everything else, like what's going on out there in the office right now, doesn't exist because
right.
we're not there to observe it.
Yeah. Mind-blowing, once again.
It is mind-blowing, but it also, we say all this not just to, you know, rock out to Floyd.
Yeah.
But because this is what science is up against. This isn't just gibberish. This isn't just philosophical gibberish as much as science would like it to be. There is a true problem with the fact that subjectivity, not objectivity, is how we interact with our universe, even though science is supposed to be based exclusively on objectivity.
Right.
Right?
Well, Stephen Hawking, you might have heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
And another dude named Leonard Lodenow. Is that how I'm going to pronounce that?
Sure.
There's a silent M in there somewhere. They have a new book called The Grand Design, and they are now saying that I think scientists used to say, we're going to find the theory of everything. Now they're saying, you know what? We're probably not going to find the theory of everything, but it's probably going to be more like what they call, quote, a family of interconnected theories, which describe your reality under very specific conditions.
And this is kind of huge for Stephen Hawking because he's long been a big supporter of the theory of everything, which takes the standard model of physics, includes gravity, which has always been elusive,
right,
and then marries it with quantum mechanics to explain everything. That's the theory of everything. It's one theory that explains everything, right?
Like that surfer guy?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Garrett Lisi, I think his name is.
Well, that was a long time ago.
It was. And, you know, it's going to be years before he's shown to be correct or incorrect.
Right.
But Hawking saying it's probably not going to be the case. There's too many different variables that don't fit together.
Right.
But the thing that really scares a physicist, that will scare any physicist, is this.
Sports.
Are those models that we've come up with,
yeah,
are they how the universe actually works or how we look at the universe and see how it works? You see what I'm saying? There's that subjectivism again. It can't be whipped.
Well, and all the things that we've said over the years that we have formed to be true, are those even true? Or are the conclusions we're reaching just based on years of thought compiled that may not have been true to begin with? So
right. I see what you mean. Like we arrive at reality by consensus.
Yeah, but is that consensus, was that even accurate along the way?
Not necessarily. It's been shown time and time again that it hasn't been accurate.
Yeah.
Through these the five revolutions, as V.M. Ramachandran puts them.
Copernicus?
Copernicus was the first one who said that Earth is not the center of the universe.
Darwinism?
Very good, Chuck. Darwin says, like, hey, we're actually just a bunch of apes.
DNA?
Freud.
Freud, yeah, before DNA.
Freud saying, like, we actually are driven by desires that we can't control and aren't really aware of. DNA.
DNA.
Which is saying, I think James Watson, who found DNA, along with Francis Crick, said, quote, there are only molecules. Everything else is sociology.
I love that quote, man. It's one of my favorites.
And then the fifth revolution, the neuroscience revolution, that we're all of our understanding and movements and experiences are nothing but neuronal transmissions, electrochemical impulses, right?
So there's not even sociology. That even is just based on firing neurons.
Right. That's where we're at right now. That's why I say I think we have everything on the table. We just haven't put it together.
Yeah.
But it's entirely possible, historically speaking, to say, well, we thought that before.
Right.
And we didn't. And what revolution is next? Will the next revolution get us over the wall of subjectivism? Or will that be the wall that we always run into?
This is a good one.
It was.
I was worried about this one.
It came out pretty good, didn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Don't you like it when we like pat ourselves on the back at the end of the show?
I think this one deserved it, man.
Well,
we went from Blu-rays to neurons and...
At the end of the day, Josh and Chuck say, we are not out of new ideas. Can I speak for you?
Go ahead.
We are not out of new ideas. And just when you think you're out of new ideas, just when you think you've plateaued, comes a Yuang along to say, no, 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 no. There are new ideas, and here's one.
Yeah.
Now give me the cash.
Exactly. If you want to learn more about innovation and new ideas, we have tons of stuff all over the site. Just type in innovation. Type in discovery. I'm sure that'll bring up a ton of stuff. And type in neurons. That'll bring up some pretty cool stuff, too.
Agreed.
You can type all those words into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com, which means it's time for listener mail.
Yes, Josh, I'm going to follow this very heady podcast with the opposite, an email form. This is from our 13-year-old fan, Peyton, in California. Well, hello. I'm sending this from my iTouch while laying in bed. I'm supposed to be asleep, so shh. Anyway, I just started listening to your podcast after my friend Claire, yes, that's the Claire from California, whose email you read on the air, who thinks Jerry looks like Tina Fey. Claire is, this, is Peyton's friend.
Okay.
So she said, oh, you got on the air, so I'm going to start listening too. Actually, I'm saying Peyton is a girl. Peyton may be a boy. You never know.
I assume boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's androgynous, right?
Yeah. Ambivalent, at least.
Claire posted on her Facebook page that I said, listen to the most recent podcast because you guys read her letter or something. I thought it was so cool. Claire and I are really good friends. Anyways, I love this podcast. Gosh, I feel so boring because I keep saying podcast. Is there like another word for that? Jared laughed at that. Anyways, and she does that thing like the kids do now where they put like eight S's at the end of a word. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I don't get that.
I don't either. We're getting old.
I guess so. I most definitely enjoyed the podcast on the octopi and stuff.
Octopi.
Uh-huh. I thought it was informational and funny. By the way, if this email doesn't make any sense, it's because my iTouch is dumb and auto-corrects words that I've already spelled right. Erg. Moving on. Your iPhone does that too. And mine does that.
Was this an email written with one of those pens that has like four different color ink you can select from?
That's what it feels like. But the reason I brought that up is I have an idea to start a website called myiphonespelledwhat.com.
Nice.
Because you ever look at some of them you send and you're like, can you please make sure you take the sofa out of the oven when you get home?
Yeah.
When you meant to say sturgeon. Let's say
surgeon to sofa. I would well, think probably go to not. Surgeon.
Okay, take the surgeon out of the oven.
Which is,
God,
I think,
so much better. I wish we would have planned this.
It's okay, buddy.
Anyway, it can make for a lot of fun. So that's my new idea.
Okay.
And that's lots of love from Peyton, age 13, in Cali.
Thanks a lot, Peyton, age 13, in Cali. Boy or girl, we're not exactly sure, but either way, we appreciate you taking the time to write in. And if you have a movie that Chuck and I have not seen, you assume we haven't seen, that you think we should see, best overlooked movie of all time. We're always looking for good suggestions. Wrap it up in an email and send it to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit Ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.